Hello, State of Ready listeners. We're back. It's been a great summer. I know we have been off the air, and I know I've received some messages from everybody. I know you're sad. I'm sorry. We've had some very busy summers there, but we are back. Once again, my name is Ed. I am owner of Ready Northwest Emergency Management. We're an emergency management disaster preparedness consulting firm. We are based out of the top left corner of the map in Portland, Oregon, and by now, all of you know our co-host, my co-host here, Bill.
Hi, Bill Fogarty. I have worked in law enforcement for the last 23 years. I worked on a for a college law enforcement agency, a local law enforcement agency, and now for a county agency. And my prior experience also has time working for Office of Emergency Services. And with us this week, we have a special guest, and I'd like to introduce Brent Bowden. Brent, do you want to talk about yourself real quick?
Brent, I know you're there, man. Come on, Brent, bro. For those, if this is the right take for you, State of Ready listeners, this is take three of us getting together to do this. And it's an interesting thing because we have tried to schedule this particular episode since our last one, and then all of the things that have happened throughout the summer, and we're like, perfect. And we went through back and forth text messages, we talked about it with each other, and we're like, okay, this is how it's going to go. We went through the pre-show, and then we're like, okay, and we begin. And now, take three of like, hey, Brent, you there, bro? So, I don't know if this will hold up on the blooper reel as well, but I know Brent is there. We've texted him, he's alive. I know he is.
I think that what we should do is we should just do the show without Brent and then just dub him in later on. I mean, I'm sure he is brilliant enough coming down from the state of Florida that everything will be perfect. He doesn't have anything going on in his life whatsoever. Maybe we should just fly him out here to California. And if we fly him out to California, Oregon, sit over, have a few brews, we can go ahead and talk about stuff.
I've always and let I've wanted to do this, and I always thought this would be kind of cool if we turn this into like a YouTube channel where we did like our podcast, so that we also get the visual aspect of it, of us, because the previous one, I don't know if you if it hits the recording there, but we were like, hey Brent, blink twice if you can hear us, type of deal. And over the podcast you really can't, and I can't see Bill's face, I can't see Brent's face either. But this is how emergency management and disaster planning goes. And I know because he texted us, he is laughing in the background. So I know that Brent is okay, and he's got a fascinating subject that we want to include him on. We
I'm not
got
so sure about that. I think we just forget about him completely. I think we just bypass this entire episode and we just start over again next week. Brent, does that sound like a good idea?
We can't
No?
hear you.
Oh,
The funny thing is, if you've ever used the Anchor app to record, you can see who's all on there. And there's a check mark that indicates who is connected and who is not connected. And Brent does have a connected check mark. And we went headset and then we went non-headset. But for some reason, did
Is
Brent
this a
on the big
is this a
Brent!
miracle? Is
Oh
this a
my God, he's
miracle?
back! He's alive!
Brent's here.
Oh, Brent is back. Sorry.
You ha hold on. First of all, let me interrupt you guys. You had me at going for brews, by the way. So.
Okay, good, good, good.
Awesome. I had complete and total faith in you, Brent.
There.
Absolutely. I hope you didn't hear anything I said previously. I didn't mean it
Absolutely.
at all.
I meant you coming out to California and having a couple beers with you, Brent, for the record, just so you know.
I seem to miss you last time I was there, so I'm looking forward to it next time.
Well,
Exactly.
don't
We have
forget
to
a whole lot of
come up the road. I mean, Portland's home to a ton of breweries that we can hit.
Isn't there an Emergency Management Association conference coming up in October?
There is. Are you coming? And that's
If I was invited.
okay. I mean, I'll invite you. I don't know how much pull I have with the Oregon Emergency Management Association. That's OEMA for anybody who wants to worth a Google. OEMA does have their Emergency Managers Conference. It will be in Eugene, Oregon, and it will be in October. They did not pay for me to say that, nor do I have any incentive to do so. But for all of you State of Ready listeners that are out there and interested in emergency management and in Oregon, that is a great place to network and with emergency managers throughout the state of Oregon, hear the new ideas, what's going on, recent events that may have occurred, along with after action reports. So, if you are interested, OEMA, Oregon Emergency Management Association, and I should have probably done my research beforehand, but let me get you the website for that in case you wanted to take a look. It is OEMA is www.OregonEmergency.com.
And now, Brent, is a good time to for you to introduce yourself if you want to talk about who you are and what you represent.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the intro again, guys, and my apologies for that technical difficulties there. So basically, Quick Series Publishing has been around for 20 years, and we've been working in the emergency management realm and arena for the last 10 easily, specifically working with emergency managers, not only for their staff and education and preparedness, but more importantly, last 5 years, really, really focusing in on improving communication to the community and the citizens themselves of each city, obviously county and state by state. So that's something that we've kind of really took to heart and really tried to come up with a few different products that actually meets the needs on an ongoing basis. And rather than kind of staying old, we're obviously doing like you guys do, living through technology and coming out with some pretty cool products that hopefully have been a big help in the last couple of years.
Awesome. And that's going to be great for our particular episode that we are doing today. This particular episode is on evacuation. So how to know where to go. I was trying to practice that for a long time. How to know where to go, which is very important. And so that's what we're going to talk about, because large-scale evacuations can occur from either hurricanes, wildfires, we're seeing it live, critical events that impact the safety of the community and the appropriate use of resources when it comes to evacuations. It is very important as community emergency managers and even business owners, if you have a lot of employees or even just a few, that you pre-plan, you prepare, and you develop these plans that potentially save lives, save your insurance rates, lower insurance rates, and as an effective use of resource management. So when we come back with our next segment, we're going to talk about why would you evacuate? What are the reasons that an evacuation would be necessary, both for your community or for your business? So why would you evacuate? If you're moving a range of people, a large number of people, what would be the reasons to do so? Well, in emergency management, large-scale regional events would be a need to be able to have to evacuate a lot of people from a certain area because of an impending hazard that is occurring. And these hazards can be pre-planned and have advance notice for us. Now, when that happens, it's a little bit easier because now emergency managers get to look at a map. And what are some of those pre-planned natural events that we could see there?
Well, I think, you know, things that we can see, obviously, are things like sporting events, major events at the Olympics and Super Bowl. You may have to move large amounts of people from an area in a relatively short amount of time. And, you know, the other thing we do is we need to look at the potential for terrorism and what targets are within your community. If you think about the large things like power plants or major businesses like Disneyland, those are potential targets. And so people need to think about what they can do to sort of pre-plan in advance how you're going to evacuate. I know from talking to Disneyland, they have a very robust emergency management system. They are ready to go. And Brent, what about for hurricanes?
No, absolutely. So hurricanes typically, especially last year with the hurricanes that hit through Texas as well as Florida, you're really looking within 24 hours of getting fair notice so that, like you said, the large citizens can actually evacuate, find out which shelters are obviously open, but more importantly, which roads are open. A lot of these folks have planned hurricane roads and evacuation roads that they tend to go to and gravitate to. So definitely everyone helping during that process makes life a little bit easier.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a great point there, Brent, because of the fact that you've got such large populations and the location and geography, with Florida just being a peninsula that sits out there, there's really only one way to go, and that's up or north during a hurricane. So having that ability to get everybody around the table and say, in the event of this happening, this is what we're going to do. We are going to evacuate people using these roads. And then I know you guys have hurricane. Is there a specific name when you flip the interstates over to multiple going northbound as opposed to southbound?
To be honest, it's slipping my mind right now, but I know it's definitely a term that quite a few folks, especially patrol, definitely uses.
Yeah. And those are important because once you find those and identify those main thoroughfares, then you can begin that pre-planning process towards the evacuations. But then you have these unplanned events, these no notice events that don't tell us when it's something's going to occur. If we consider tornadoes, we may have minutes time to figure out how we are going to evacuate and get to a safe area and a safe room. And when we talk about evacuation, we don't necessarily mean moving from one physical spot and getting a lot of people to another physical spot, maybe miles away. We are still talking about evacuations in the form of either vertical evacuations to floors or to a safe room. How do we get children, lots of children, from one area of the classroom to a particular safe area? We are seeing in real time, if you follow along with social media, if you know people who live in Southern or Northern California, in regards to the fires. Bill, I mean, you've experienced that in real time. How quickly do these things happen and these notices for evacuation?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think was a real learning lesson from the fires last year compared to this year is the amount of need for emergency notifications and how quickly you need to get them out. And one of the things I am absolutely very impressed with is the fires this year. And you start looking at the things that have happened, whether that's the Holy Fire down in Southern California, or you start looking at the fires, the fire complex at Mendocino. They have done a phenomenal job of pushing out information. Even though this was obviously an unplanned event of a fire, of shelters that were operational, where those shelters were, how many spaces were available, and what each shelter could actually take, animals, horses. I mean, you look around, it was just amazing. And I think that leads into something else for California, which is earthquakes. We're very fortunate that we have not had a major event here in quite some time, and hopefully that's not jinxing it. But looking at what that is and what that might be. And, you know, the other thing I want to highlight is just something that you said earlier about evacuations and large scale event and flipping the freeway around. And that was really one of the lessons learned from the problem we had at the dam here in Northern California, where the freeways had to be shifted so that that way we can get mass evacuation of people out of the location. And I think there's another unplanned event. And, you know, Ed, I want to throw it to you for a second. What about the flight out of SeaTac where the plane ended up getting taken off by a mechanic?
Yeah, so when you have those type of situations where they might not be a regional one, but you'll have small scale events, working in an airport previously, we prepared for these types of events of smaller scale, but still a huge population base. Now, we could take that event twofold. We can say, you know, we have a rogue aircraft in the air. Where's it going? We don't know. Do we have time to evacuate? Do we know? And it all depends on intent, payload, and what it's doing. But if we have a smaller scale event, what happened, you have to evacuate people from an aircraft and get them re-security checked and everything. These smaller events that occur at large places, let's say an airport or even a school, if we consider these local events and how we all of a sudden have to evacuate people from one area of the building or another or recheck them, I mean, they happen in active shooter and hostile intruder or hostile active threat, hostile intruder type of scenarios, which can include an active shooter. You're moving a lot of people out of an office building, maybe into another safe area, or a lot of people are spontaneously moving on their own. So it's very important that the training for that particular building, or a particular staff, is done. And what are these different, I mean, like, Bill, what would you recommend like when it comes to like training and what to do for an active threat?
Well, I think, you know, one of the most important things is to look at the Department of Homeland Security's run, hide, fight video. And I think I have a basic understanding of what you should be doing and how to go ahead and really think about what your decision-making is going to be during a violent intruder X episode. The other thing is really doing training with your local law enforcement and fire departments to figure out where they're going to be coming in, where they're going to be staging at, where they're going to be evacuating to. And, you know, really that's a site assessment. And hopefully that you've done with them to go ahead and figure out what works and what's not going to work. And that goes to rally locations and figuring out where your people are going to go out to. I'm fortunate enough to work in a correctional facility where we have medical staff on hand that may be able to triage people. And I think that goes to the last step of this, which is what is each person's responsibility and where are they going to respond to? I think this also sort of dovetails very nicely into something else to be prepared for, which is in case you have a hazardous chemical release. And, you know, Ed, what's some of the things we could do for hazardous chemical releases?
Well, the first thing when it comes to hazardous chemical release is knowing what where it is. So I always recommend when I talk to businesses is know your neighbors. So where are they? Are you in location of a, are you in proximity to the location of a some type of plant that produces some sort of methyl ethylness fuel or hazardous chemical? And then to understand weather patterns. So sometimes you may have to shelter in place, but other times, depending on the severity, if it's a large fire with the possibility of rupturing a fuel tank that can cause a large explosion, you will have to evacuate. And so it's very important, and first responders will understand weather patterns and they'll get real time. We'll talk more about that later in this podcast here, but also understanding as a individual and as a business, are you around prevailing winds? Are you upstream, downstream, or upslope or downslope from a particular area? And then, Bill, since you're a first responder, what are the things that you need to know when it comes to hazardous chemical release and evacuation?
Well, I think the first thing to think about is you don't want to be the canary in the coal mine. You don't want to be the one running in with no protection, trying to figure out what the problem is. And unfortunately, I can say I've done that in the past, not one of my wisest decisions, and it's things I'm trying to make sure other of my colleagues learn what not to do. But as a first responder, you're really trying to get your information from your dispatchers, which are your lifeblood for either fire or law. And I cannot emphasize enough how important dispatchers are and how much I appreciate them. They're going to give you the information you need, how to safely arrive there. They're going to work with you, hopefully unified command with your fire departments and with your law enforcement agencies. And that includes not only a medical component as well to figure out how you're going to attack the problem and figure out what the best possible solution is. Taking in information, like you said, about weather patterns. And I think the last part of that is really how the weather and how those first responders are going to be impacted by the chemical release and what PPE is available. And can you know what PPE is? It's personal protective equipment, and how important it is to go ahead and have gear in your car, whether or not it's a face mask, a glove, a jacket, whatever. You need to make sure you take care of yourself. And I think that leads to the next thing, which is really my background in exercises and making sure that people are prepared for critical events. We have the great shakeout coming up in October of this year. Ed, do you guys participate in that up in Oregon?
We certainly do. We participate in the great shakeout. Recommend everybody take a look at that. Great shakeout, I believe, .org. For more information, it happens every year and it's a very good exercise to play even for young children as well to understand what to do during an earthquake.
Well, and I think there's other things that we have in San Mateo County. We have Community Shield, where we actually go out in the community and start passing out different leaflets and information like we would in case there's an actual outbreak of an epidemic where we need to figure out how we're going to disperse the antidote to people. And I think it also goes down to, you know, even to be kind of silly, if you start thinking about a zombie apocalypse, what would you need? Where would you need to go? And I think that also, you know, when you start thinking about things like that with Halloween coming up, you need to start thinking about your bug out bag. And Ed, what about bug out bags?
So bug out bags, also known as 72-hour kits or go kits or disaster kits. Bug out bags, which will be the topic of next week's episode, will have most of the important essential emergency supplies, documents, et cetera, that you would need to have with you if you were to evacuate a particular area. When I do these emergency presentations to businesses, I talk a lot about the stuff that you need to have, not just the food and the water, but also contact information, family information, pet information, and just having some sort of basic supplies. And we're going to talk more about that next week. So if you're really interested in stuff for preparedness, that's one to tune into. And so it's important to have all those items with you. But then a recent worldwide events and I guess the atmosphere that's happening around the earth right now, and a reason to have to evacuate. We haven't had to talk about this in 60 years, but what about a possible incoming nuclear attack? We haven't had those drills since civil defense days in the 1950s and 60s during the Cold War, but what are some of the things to remember if that was to occur?
Well, I think, you know, as we've talked about in a previous episode about emergency notifications, I think it's really important you sign up for your emergency notifications so that people can get to you in a heartbeat. The other thing is, obviously, we're going to talk about the app from QuickSeries that allows people to know where the sheltering locations are. And, you know, if you don't know where they are, you should probably do some research to get prepared in advance. But again, using something like QuickSeries, the app, you can go ahead and have a shelter location pop up on your phone immediately. And, you know, we also need to know what the shelter status is. As Ed said, we haven't done these in the last 60 years. And so there's a lot of shelters that people simply have just gotten rid of because they just didn't need them anymore. And I think that part of the finding out what the status is knowing what equipment you have and what equipment you're going to need. If you start looking at iodine pills that people would be taking after an attack, do you have those? Do you have enough for your community? Do you have enough for your business? And really looking at what that is going to be able to do for you and how you're going to be able to survive. And, you know, when we start looking at what you need to prepare and we start talking about bug out bags, 72-hour bags, as we talked about, you know, one of the things to think about is how that might actually end up impacting your insurance as well, because it shows you're building in some resilience. And Ed, we talked about a future episode that you want to talk about. And what was that topic?
It was going to be on co-op plans, the continuity of operations planning, both for government facilities and government agencies, but also for private businesses. Me and Bill have really focused a lot on the preparedness and the planning and then the response of a disaster. But once that disaster occurs, things happen on the back end in the recovery process. And as an agency and as a private business, there have to be some things in place or at least thought of in order for you to be able to get back up and running. So we're going to talk a lot about that in the future episode. We'll bring on some special guests who have experience in that. We're going to little teaser there. You're going to want to tune in for that one, but we're going to bring them in. And that way you can see, you know, we prepare everything we do we possibly can with planning evacuation, the go bags and stuff. The disaster hits. Now what? Now comes the recovery process. And we're going to talk about that. And what I wanted to refocus on was what Bill talked about insurance. As a business, it is very important to talk to your broker, to talk to your insurance company, and tell them that we are putting in place resiliency within our organization, whether it's through plans, through training, through supplying, because the insurance company takes tremendous losses during a disaster. Last year, over $300 billion in losses to the insurance company when it comes to what all those hurricanes, wildfires, and everything did. So it's very important for them to try to figure out ways to save money, which in turn would save your organization money. So definitely worth a conversation. And if you want to know more, you can contact me or you can contact Bill as well too. And we'd be happy to point you towards resources for that. But, oh, go ahead.
I think that right now, one of the most important things to talk about for resources is going to be the next segment, which is what technology is available to you. And I think that's why we have Brent here. And I'd like to go ahead and close out this segment and say we're going to be hearing from Brent at the next segment.
So we are on our next segment here. We didn't just invite Brent to listen to me and Bill talk. And we brought him on board because he is a foremost example of the technology that is available out there for evacuations and for your general public as well as your employees. So we have previous episodes where we talked about emergency notifications and different resources for that, but we really wanted to bring on Brent because of his expertise with the Quick Series app. So I'm going to toss it over to Brent. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about all about Quick Series there?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ed. And I want to hit a couple things, which is actually a big portion of not only what we do as a business, as far as content delivery, but bring in a technology aspect. So on the last segment, you spoke about obviously your go bags, your bug out kits. You talked about preparedness. And as well, Bill, you talked about shelters. So these are all crucial elements of the technology that we brought into play. So what it is that a while ago, we started fielding a lot of interest in not just our printed solutions, but also the need for something a little bit more interactive. So we started working with Department of Defense and the Pentagon on a couple applications, as well as the FBI. And some of our clients at a city and county level started learning about what we were trying to do. And we really started focusing in, listening in to key personnel across the country about the, as you guys talked about, the key elements of emergency management, first responders, before, during, and after disasters. So what we did is we initially created an application that not only empowers the counties to provide communication to their citizens before, during, and after disasters, but it also is meant for the everyday. It actually engages them to build their emergency kits. It actually interacts with them and giving them updates on news, on alerts, which could be if you're having an event. It could be a fundraiser. It could be, you talked about the Great Shakeout event. It could be anything of that nature that doesn't necessarily have to be emergency related. So it was really meant to engage and learn and educate citizens on a regular basis. So we kind of took that template and have been working quite steadily with it over the last few years at a city and county level. And I want to say unfortunately, but fortunately at the same time, a lot of our clients who faced the hurricanes last year, as well as Bill, some of your colleagues in California for the wildfires, they definitely utilize the application in one of the most crucial ways it was meant to be used. And that was in time of the disaster, it's a key communication tool. And it's about informing, you know, what roads are open, what shelters are open, for some of the health folks out there, what point of dispensing sites could be open. But it's also giving that additional information about the shelters themselves. It's also engaging with them about, okay, if a wildfire is about to, you know, come my way, there's quite a bit of content there that you can help prepare you before it actually heads your way. Or the same thing for a tornado, as well as so many other disasters that unfortunately we're facing on a regular basis. So that's basically the premise of the application. And I want to, and actually very proud to say that we're going to be launching, I'm going to call it version 2.0 in the spring, just in time for disaster season next year. But we're working with quite a few different states and counties who really focus on the entire state. So think of it as a citizen. If I'm a citizen and I go ahead and download the, let's just talk about it, the California State Community Preparedness app, if it exists, it's actually a one state app, or would be a one state app, to which I can go ahead and choose my county. And I can follow my county, I can engage with them as a citizen, but more importantly, like I said, it's all about me as a county getting out to my people and informing them the best way we can. And I hate to say it, but working government, it's about this, the best bang for the buck out there. So,
Brett, how hard is it to actually use?
It's really, as far as emergency managers, because I know there's a big audience of emergency managers out there. If you can log into Facebook, if you can log into your email, you can definitely administer the portal, basically the engine that drives this application, with your eyes closed. It's that easy to use.
Hey, what information do you need to put in before an actual activation?
So what we try to do upon setup of the application is we try and get as much information as possible. So different location types, obviously any county, state resources that could be in there that are crucial. So those are some of the key elements, but we are also able to integrate it with easy to use files. So for the folks that are using GIS out there, we can pull in from some of those files and update it pretty quickly so that when the app is up and running, that you're up and running shortly thereafter.
That's awesome. And I just want to use for our audience who maybe are not aware of it, GIS is a geographic information system, and it provides a framework for gathering and managing, analyzing data. And I think it's one of the most basic things that everyone should have, emergency manager, is having someone who's skilled in that. And Brian, I'm really happy to hear that. What about getting people on board? You know, where do you find the people who are interested in participating in this app?
So, I mean, obviously the main audience is the people that would actually purchase it. So emergency managers, both at a city, county, and now state level, we've recognized the fact that some of the public health preparedness folks are actually playing a little bit of a bigger role and trying to get involved in emergency management. So that's why I kind of mentioned point of dispensing sites. So the pods, especially if you're giving out medication. But there's a crucial element, I think, and I want to go back on something that I may have missed, is that we talked about, and then, you know, it's so important that you send out that mass notification message. That's something that our technology or the application that we don't want to take away from. It's a very crucial piece of technology out there, and it's great at what it does. But one of the missing elements, or one of the complementary elements to mass notification, is it's great that I'm getting this message, but where do I actually go get additional information? And that's actually one of the primary reasons that this app came about, is that that mass notification message was going out, and all of a sudden the question started occurring, where do I go get additional information? Is it Facebook? Is it my county or city website? Is it the local news? And then all of that can get lost in translation. We've created the environment that the city and county can actually control, and gives them the power to communicate with their, obviously their citizens, but also, and more importantly, at certain times, city and county staff.
I think that's really important. Ed and I have talked before about, in the absence of knowledge, chaos ensues. You know, you need to have a clear communications platform, and you need to go ahead and make sure that people know where to go. And does this actually include things for public works and where people who maybe get sandbags as well?
I don't want to say the possibilities are endless, but we've had multiple county departments join in and try and be part of the app. I want to say at one point, I think some of our clients were even using it during the last election, and letting people know what capacity levels were, what the delay was at certain voting stations. So how they use it, how they interact with it. If you want to put traffic cameras in there, that's definitely a possibility. If you want to put in road closures and detours for construction, that's a possibility. So, you know, it really depends on how you want to interact with your citizens your city and or counties.
That's great. And I know, you know, as emergency manager, one of the things we think about are heating station or cooling centers and what's available, food and water at each location, whether or not they're accepting pets. I know there's also an issue in staffing. I think, Ed, you and I have talked about staffing where maybe you get volunteers from before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a huge thing. And what I'm hearing coming from the Quick Series app is that it very much puts, and I don't want to use the word, you know, intelligence in the hands of their citizens, but it puts the resource availability, because I know the word intelligence kind of has a different connotation depending on which way you look at it and where you're coming from. But it really does, from what you're saying, it really gives the citizens the power to understand what is happening in their community. And I think everything from, like you said, from voting locations all the way to heating and cooling centers to sandbag to evacuation routes, you really run the gamut of everything that a question or that a citizen might question or wonder what is going on even on a daily basis. So I think that's hugely beneficial for the citizens and the emergency managers and the agencies who use that
app. Absolutely. And they're all, I think, important elements. We're learning that during your last segment, I was, you know, I can listen to you guys all day, so I really appreciate your work. But it's there's a couple things I think in emergency management, first responder field, that you should always know your surroundings, you know, in and all times, especially if you're, you know, before, during, and after an event. But I can't harp on enough, and I've been to so many conferences and so many speaking engagements, that your relationships are priceless. And it's so important that you formulate of who your neighbors are. And if you're practicing a drill, whether it's an active threat or the great shakeout, or if it's a hazmat spill, I mean, we have content on all this stuff, but when it comes down to it, you have to make sure that not only you're practicing, but you have the relationships in place.
Bill, what's one of our state of ready mantras that we always say?
Do you want to start off with the practice the way you want to play, or do you want to do the other one?
Do the how many fingers are pointing type of deal. What do? We shake hands before disaster,
so we're not pointing fingers after.
Exactly. That's the importance. And our previous state of ready episodes really harp on that, what Brent brought out, how important it is that technology can bring us everything that we could possibly want. But if we don't manage those relationships and grow them and blossom them and cultivate them to the point that we can rely and know who these people are on the other side that we are relying upon, as Bill brings out many, many times, it is very important to shake hands with those so that you're not pointing fingers afterward. Things will happen during a disaster, but you don't want the very first time you introduce yourself to somebody be because there's an imminent dam failure or a hurricane coming. And I think Brent puts it on the head. The technology gives everything you could possibly need, but once that interaction has to occur, it's best to make sure you know who you're talking to.
Well, I think that's where we've talked about this before, about how important it is to make friends with American Red Cross and get to know who your regional reps are. Work with Team Rubicon so that they know who you are and what resources you may need in case of a disaster. And you've talked about our partners in the National Weather Service before.
Yes, absolutely. The National Weather Service, they're the ones who basically give us everything that we are expecting when it comes to forecasts, everything from rainfall amounts to drought to severe thunderstorm warnings to anything that affects us on a daily basis in regards to the weather. It affects pilots. People make decisions, operational decisions about whether or not they're going to fly. People make operational decisions about whether or not we're going to send our boats out based upon what the weather is. The National Weather Service plays a tremendous part in emergency management, and it is one for emergency managers to definitely have representatives or a close working relationship because they can give you all the information you need. You have a hazardous material release and you need to know where to evacuate. You need to know where the winds are. National Weather Service. Severe storms are coming in and forecasted in the next 6 hours. Where are they going to hit? Who should I warn? National Weather Service. So they are providing a tremendous resource because then they can assist your operational planning when it comes to evacuation.
And I think, you know, the next part of this is really equipment and knowing what all those people are going to be needing or what equipment they can bring to you. National Weather Service, Team Rubicon, American Red Cross, they all need power. And if they don't have power, they're not going to be able to function. Power comes in many different forms and fashions. We need to make sure we have bathrooms available for the staffing. We need to make sure that there's staff that can respond. Brent, what kind of technology do we need to operate your application? I mean, what do you really need as the basics in order to get it up and functioning?
You absolutely just need, as far as the back end, so the portal is concerned, you obviously have to have some type of connectivity. But as far as a user standpoint, being a publishing company, we focus a lot on content. So a lot of the books that we have published, including so ICS, Incident Command System, even at one point, CERT, Community Emergency Response Teams, and then everything to do with hurricane, wildfire, family preparedness, that's all within the application and is hard-coded in there. So whether you have connectivity or not, that's actually going to be there for you to prepare as much as you can.
And Brent, just a quick question. So when you're out in the field, is this something that you can go and use on your application or is it a desktop application or how can we use it if we need to?
It's definitely smartphone tablet friendly.
Awesome. And is there anything else they need other than some juice for their phone and their local telephone signal?
Other than that, you're good to go.
That's great.
Awesome. So one of the things, because this show is, because this particular episode is based upon evacuations, when the word comes down the line that you need to be evacuated, whether you are a community or whether you are an individual at a place of business or you get the notification to evacuate, what's really great, what I hear from Brent is all that information is already there. So once you download the Quick Series app, take the time to understand what it is within your community and how to do that. Not many people that are not in the emergency management or preparedness field practice my evacuation route or practice how long is it going to take to get my go bag. Being on the coastline here in Oregon, there's a tremendous outreach effort and importance in understanding that when people visit the coast, the tsunami can happen at any time. So understand what your evacuation routes, whether or not you use a Quick Series app, but when you go into an area, understand that if we had to evacuate rapidly, where would we go, how would we go, and what would be the reasons why. So being familiar with your area, and if you have the resources now, if you've downloaded the Quick Series app, take a look at that, read that information so that you're not scrolling through it while you're trying to avoid a wildfire or you're in gridlock on an interstate trying to get out of a hurricane's path.
And Ed, I think you need just really hit something on the head for me that I think we sort of forget, and that is when you're traveling to another location, download the app and look at where it is you might be going to make sure you get notified when you're on vacation or when you're traveling. It is so important to be thinking about things and preparing in advance and sort of thinking that 10 steps ahead. And, you know, if you're going to be going down to Florida and Brent, I know your application is fantastic. I've seen it in action. I've seen it work amazing. get the app, get it ready to go. Just because you don't live there doesn't mean you shouldn't know what's going on around you, especially if you're in the world of emergency management. You know, so many things collide and work together that if you're not prepared, you're going to end up losing. And if you end up being prepared and knowing what's out there, it really ends up helping you. And I think that one of the things we just hit on also is, when do we actually evacuate? And I think for me, that's going to be my favorite segment, which will be coming up next.
Available to us. And we talked about the Quick Series app. And Bill, prior to us discussing, and we were trying to figure out what segments we wanted to talk about, Bill remarked that he was very passionate about this segment. So I will go ahead and let you, Bill, go ahead and tell us what this segment is about here.
Absolutely. Thank you. You know, I was trained when I first went working in a jail to always know where the big red mushroom button was. And for those of you who don't know the big red mushroom button, what that means is that's the panic button. And really, I've heard this described a couple of different ways. After the Orville Dam incident, it was pulling the big red hammer or pulling the big lever. The mushroom button for me is something that's significant, that it's when the stuff has hit the fan and you now need to evacuate, then you're going to press the button. And, you know, I think one of the important things to do is find out what causes you to do it and what risks there are for you. And what about in the medical field? What kind of risks are there? What would you be thinking about in order to press the button?
When it comes to the medical field, I've also previously worked in airports. We had our big red crash phone. And when that thing went off, but there are panic buttons, there are emergency buttons. And once they go off, a couple of things happen, and whether or not it happens within your community or your organization, maybe a little bit different, but the gist is once that button goes off, people get notified, and that notification goes out to everybody. And whether or not it comes with instructions of what to do, or if it's just a notification, the important thing is to make sure that everybody knows what happened. I think that's the fundamental thing. When that big red button gets pressed, what is everybody going to do? And if we haven't identified what that skill set is or what that reaction is, I think we've missed a huge part of the reason why we have that button.
And Brent, I know you've had some experiences before. Who presses the big red button when you activate your application showing people how to evacuate out of locations where shelter locations are?
So it's a great question, Bill. It seems in our experience, and I don't want to say that it's actually done through the big red button through our app, but that decision to evacuate, it goes, and the outcome of it, as Ed alluded to, there's so much positive that could happen and lives being saved, but on the possibility that it's done prematurely at the same time could actually cause a lot of panic. So the decisions that are made prior to those things occurring, I definitely think there's quite a few relationships that are happening, quite a few emergency managers meeting, so that when it actually does occur, our tool is obviously one of the things that they utilize and complement it with. But definitely there's a multi-decision process. And I think, Bill, you can probably speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that what things that I've seen are having plans in place done by different people to really look at what the authority of each person's role is going to be and deciding who the primary person is who's going to be the one to make that decision about, okay, it is time to evacuate. And, you know, even on small scale events, you have it at the local level of local law enforcement, local fire departments. On the county level, you have the Office of Emergency Services who may be making that decision. And then obviously at the state and federal level as well. You know, you need to make sure that along with who's going to press that button, you decide what the safeguards are that are in place in case that person is unable to make it. And one of those things is making sure you have a secondary person who can go ahead and be the person to press the button in case the other person isn't there. We also need to ask that question of where they're responding to. Most disasters don't always occur Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And so really that means you need to make sure you know where your people are coming from, how long it's going to take for them to get there, and who's on call for each week. And, you know, really that maybe comes down to who your third person is and where they're going to be coming from. And a big component of this is doing scheduling. And one of the things that I've seen work very well is obviously you have on-call people and finding out which people are going to be in your local area during holidays, during vacations, and what the response time is going to be in case of a critical event, but also figuring out what's going to end up happening for a prolonged event. Ed?
Yeah, also sorry. In regards to that, I know you're talking about the county, city, state levels of government, but coming from the business side of it, if you're an emergency manager working with a business and understanding that if you have a regional or a national company with multiple locations everywhere, that big red button that gets pushed that gets corporate and the executive office notified. Let's say if your central location might be in Denver and that's where the corporate office is, but you have an incident that's happening in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Who has the authority and what would be the notification process for that location? Or maybe you have a string of them that are maybe in Atlanta or Savannah and your home office is located somewhere else. So while the who triggers and what does the plan say and who has the authority to do so may be clearly delineated by those living within the community and also working within the agency. If you're a business and you're national or you're regional, consider what was just said by Bill. Who has the authority? Who can do it? And when is it scheduled to? So maybe consider having some sort of administrator on call who has the ability to activate those notifications saying, okay, let's get our employees ready to go and evacuate them in a particular area. So taking what we in this much taking the aspect of what emergency managers in the community speak about, but also the private emergency management sector that's up and coming and using those resources and knowledge that is gained from the government side. How can we implement that on the public or private sector side? So definitely take those same types of information and roll it over there.
I think also part of this is what you just talked about, which is communication. And what are you going to do when the communication goes down? You know, we have technology that's available, and I think the basic one is obviously telephone. But we need to understand that, you know, basically AT&T handles approximately 90% of all telephone traffic. So if AT&T is down, 90% of the world's cell phones are going to be down, or the cell phones in that local area are going to be down. Finding out not only if the telephones are down, but if you have sat phones. And when was the last time you tested them and found out who actually has them and whether or not they're actually working or not? In addition to that, radios. And when were they last checked? Which radios are assigned to what people? Do you have a listing of who has those radios?
Yeah. And in regards to that, since we're such a mobile society and we do so much information over the mobile or over the mobile phone system, one of the things I'm interested in, Brent, feel free to fill me in if your app does this, is that if we do lose our radio communications or cell phone towers and we open up, because you said the Quick Series app has the ability to hard wire stuff in there so that even if we lose connectivity, we're okay. Are emergency managers able to utilize that to have pre-placed information that if we do lose connectivity, that we can still utilize it?
So that's one of the things I think as we're working quite a bit more with the private industry, especially Ed, as you alluded to, some of the bigger companies that have multiple locations, and that's one of the biggest concerns. We're finding out that I think that the P&P rule almost come into effect, and what I call P&P is basically plan and practice. And so if a certain location or a certain county or an entire state could be down or their office is down in that location, right away, because they put that plan in place for that location, whether it's in New York and you're in California or Oregon in Florida, it doesn't really matter, is that you've practiced that scenario that if part of your office is or half of the country is down, you know exactly what to do. And I think it's really crucial in you know bigger and smaller companies. But we've worked with a lot of utility companies, oil and gas, where obviously they're almost faced with that, and it's one of the probably biggest concerns that they face with, especially for emergency managers and their safety folks there.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. What I guess maybe a future episode that we could talk about, Bill, would be the whole blue sky, gray sky, black sky theory that happens when we lose basic utilities and how what we should be prepared for, how emergency managers should react to those type of situations when we lose total connectivity and utilities.
Absolutely. I think it'd be a great idea. And, you know, that really leads me into one of the topics that I was completely unaware of as a manager in emergency management, which was gets cards. And in case you don't know what a gets card is, please, please, please go find it out. Basically, a gets card ends up giving you primary or priority traffic on telephones. and allows you to go ahead and monopolize and use that service to make sure that you have the opportunity to go ahead and talk to other people to get emergency managers up and functioning in a faster realm than if you're just waiting and relying upon cell phones. And again, finding out who in your local community is the primary person for that, whether or not they've ever used them, whether or not they've ever practiced with them, when they expired, and did the cards get back after people retired? And, you know, if you don't have GETS cards, I would highly recommend you go find them. And if you don't know what those are, go talk to your local emergency managers. If you don't have a local emergency manager, talk to your county manager. And, you know, I think this goes back to just making sure you have the ability to go ahead and communicate at all times.
Yeah, definitely building redundancy into your system, whether you're a county, city, state, private business, corporation, global, making sure you have the ability to communicate. It all boils down to the process of transferring information, whether it's voice data, sight, picture, or whatever, just to make sure that that gets transmitted so we can make operational decisions.
And Brent, can you tell us about some success stories with your app being used during hurricanes?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to say, last year is devastating, the two hurricanes and the hundreds of million dollars of damages in Texas and Florida. But let's use that as an example. So we had one of our clients, and I won't say who, just to keep them and have the respect for them. But basically get bringing in the media when necessary and bringing in social media, especially if you see something that's coming, you know, a few days out. And that's typically that range. Obviously, you're spotting hurricanes, you know, well a week in advance mostly. And they're looking at, especially the National Weather Service, they're phenomenal at, and NOAA as well, they're phenomenal at basically targeting those timelines. So best lessons learned and the success is that as that hurricane was approaching Texas last year, mayors were getting on television, they were getting on the radios and asking their citizens to basically download the app. And one of the things I think that when we're looking at a true success, and FEMA is reiterating it, Administrator Long, so Brock Long is really reinforcing the resilience now, and is really being focused on at the ground level, which ground level means to me is that local, state, private organizations. It starts with them, and it eventually works your way up to obviously the state as well as federal. But for us to be a more resilient community in every stake and every corner of the country, we have to get engaged early. We have to prepare early. And that's why that call out by the mayors, by their social media. And we saw spikes of, you know, if they were a million in population in that certain city and or county, we saw spikes of 50 to 75,000 downloads prior to obviously the hurricane hitting. So that worked out really well, and hopefully that actually led to lives being saved and hopefully, you know, homes being prepared as much as possible.
And Brent, for the shelters and operations, did you guys or did someone put in the hours that they're available, hours they're open? How would that all work?
Yeah, so the administration portal that I've been talking about, especially in the last segment, that's something that you can actually indicate. So it's not only the hours of operation. You talked about the Red Cross. So if it's a Red Cross shelter, if it's a shelter that is fully accessible and special needs, because that is definitely underrated, and it's so important that we communicate those shelters as well. And then obviously, Bill, you alluded to it on earlier segments, the pet friendly shelters. So all of that, you know, hours of operation as well, that all can be included, that the emergency managers or the administrators of the portal can absolutely put that in there.
Okay. And is that also give you the opportunity to reach out to CERT team members as well?
Yeah, for sure. So we definitely have, I alluded to, we definitely have content on CERT specific material. And that's one thing that we're actually looking at creating something specific for CERT. So one of the cries that I've heard in dealing with so many CERT folks and our hockey guide apparently has been fantastic across the country to help the training. But one of the cries that people are still utilizing is the, how do I know if they're available? And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to do my phone chain and call people manually. So that's one of the things we're looking at reinventing early next year. And hopefully complementing that new state approach that we're looking at is I can actually find out who's available, when they're available, how fast they can be on scene, and even potentially log their hours as a CERT volunteer, so that obviously the potential city and or county can get reimbursed through the grants.
That would be great. And when you do the app and the upgrade, please let us know, because we'd like to go ahead and make sure everyone's aware of that as well. I mean, I think it's so important, as you brought up before, that you're trying to make your initial community resilient, and that's where CERT is so important. And having members of the community who are prepared in case of emergencies to help out everyone else who's part of this. And Brent, I think that, you know, the last part for really for your app, and you know, this is something that you and I had talked about at length about before, is, you know, how are you going to pay for this application? And I know one of the things I'd explored was using Homeland Security funding. What other ways have people come up to pay for your application?
Great question. So yeah, definitely Homeland Security has been the front runner, especially the UAC area. So the Urban Area Security Initiative has been great for that. But I think people are finding ways and putting it in their line items. That I want to say one of the top priorities is to communicate and educate their citizens, and that mass notification is just one tool, but what is that secondary tool that may actually become the primary tool, so that it's almost becoming a light on itself in the budget. But I think what we're seeing now is the trend of different departments teaming up and looking at ways that they can get this purchase, as well as privately, you know, private organizations looking to help the community that they're in, looking to help engage and create more awareness around just being prepared. So we're seeing some of the oil and gas companies actually step up and, you know, how can they partner as well? So definitely a few different ways.
One of the things that I've been noticing as I've been hearing the back and forth on this conversation here is we're starting to see a fundamental shift in the emergency management world from pull to push. And I think we're starting to see that when it comes to the utilization of technology. And Brent, from what I'm hearing, your application is doing a phenomenal job of that, of pushing information. What used to be the pull aspect of people want information, we would have to pull them into emergency management. Pull them to ask questions. But now, because of the availability of being able to download your app and putting in so much information that we could push it to them, and they can still have an active engagement, but being able to push all that information that is critically needed from shelters to evacuation routes to other types of information, I think is great. And I think the visibility for large-scale incidents to have really champions behind you, such as mayors or business owners saying the information that we need is going to be on this app, download it, and that's what's going to be able to allow us to weather through and be resilient for whatever incident strikes us. And I think that's a phenomenal thing that we're starting to see that shift in emergency management to that push, give the information to people.
Absolutely. And it's an incredible shift, and we couldn't be happier to be part of that. And we really look forward to progressing with technology and working with private organizations, the federal agencies that we work with, and just keep that going, building that resilience so that we become stronger as a country.
Awesome. Well, with that there, let's go ahead and we're going to close out, and we'll move on to our next segment. We're going to kind of wrap up the episode here and kind of give an overview of what we talked about here. So we'll be right back. Well, we hope you've liked this episode of State of Ready here. We have talked a lot about evacuations. We talked about the importance of planning for evacuations and different types of events, pre-planned events such as hurricanes, sporting events, but also what doesn't tell us that they're coming, earthquakes, tornadoes, active shooter or terrorism events. So we talked about the importance of that type of planning. But then once, as emergency managers and as business owners or safety planners, once we talk about what do we have to prepare for to evacuate, we chatted about the different types of technology. So if you want to and the importance of technology and what's available out there for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ed.
definitely are looking forward to truly making a difference. And obviously it goes well emergency management. There's so many folks getting involved with that and just being better prepared in general. We've alluded to private organizations. We've alluded to different type of organizations as well as all levels of government. We just are focusing on trying to make a difference and providing a tool that will do that, whether that is the app that we've been talking about. We have some other projects in the works that'll definitely be of relevance, I think, for a lot of folks, especially businesses. So we're excited to where things are going. And obviously, as we said, just making sure we're making a difference and making the country become a little bit more resilient than what we are right now.
Awesome. And Bill, what about that big red mushroom button?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, it is a passion of mine, is knowing when that button's going to get pressed, who's going to end up pressing it, why they're pressing it. So making sure your plans are current and up to date, so that way you don't have any surprises waiting for you down the line. And really the last part of this to me is training and training and training. And, you know, I said it before, practice the way you're going to play. If you don't practice the way you're going to play, you're going to have problems on game day. And so for me, it's not only saying who the people are, why they're going to do it, when they're going to do it, but then actually practicing it. And, you know, not obviously having a false alert, but actually working with Brent's tools in Quick Series and the application to go ahead and see how you're going to get up and functioning when you need to get up and functioning. So that way you're not trying to sort of put your finger in the dike when it's getting ready to break, but instead you're already prepared and you know what you're going to do.
Yeah, and throughout all of our State of Ready episodes, we always harp on training, we always harp on education, we always harp on knowledge, and we always harp on making those arrangements and relationships now, so that you're not pointing, shake hands now, so you're not pointing fingers later. And with that, we're going to talk about cool stuff next week. We're going to talk about go bags. So what goes in them? We're going to ask what's in yours. I'm going to open up my go bag, figure out what's in mine, Bill, and take a look at yours and cool stuff that we can put in there. I know that we talk so much when it comes to meetings and preparedness and plans, but now, you know, it's going to be the grab bag of, like, what works for you. And you know what? We'd like to hear from you out there, listeners, State of Ready listeners. If you've got something out there that is specific to your go bag or you really like, let us know, because then we can talk about that. Maybe we even have it in ours. We'd really love some user and listener engagement. So when I post this here, I'll also post the question, let us know what's in your go bag. And then we'll recite some of those comments over the air and then basically share your experiences of what you use or may not have used. So with that, we'd love to thank Brent Bowden with Quick Series for being on our show here. Once again, my name is Northwest Emergency Management. You can find me on Twitter at @ready_Northwest or give me a shout out at readynw.com.
And this is Bill Fogarty. You can reach me at 21Clets. That's again at 21CLETS on Twitter, or you can reach me on my website at www.21clets.com. And Brent, how can they get in touch with you?
Easy, pretty straightforward. It's quickseries.com. You can definitely find our information there, or give us a call, 800-361-4653. Any of our folks and sales reps will be definitely looking forward to helping any organization out. And on that note, I can't thank you enough, Ed and Bill, for taking the time to have me on the show.
Yes, absolutely. It was a pleasure having you on board. Thanks for letting us know about that. And in the meantime, we thank you for listening here. Feel free to tune into any of our previous episodes. You can find State of Ready at the following. You can find where you record on the Anchor app. You can also find us at Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, and Android Podcasts and Pocket Casts. So we are pretty much everywhere you can find a podcast. So with that, we want to thank you for listening. And always remember to be in a state of ready. Well, State of Ready listeners, welcome back. We are here. It's been a busy summer, but the gang's all here. This is Ed with Ready Northwest Emergency Management. It's emergency management disaster preparedness firm. We're based out of Portland, Oregon, the top left corner of the map. And I have with me our co-host, Bill.
Bill Fogarty from San Mateo County. I have been previously an Office of Emergency Services Director, and my background is in law enforcement, where I've worked for the last 23 years. And this time we actually have a special guest, and I'd like to introduce Brent Bowden at this point. Brent, can you introduce yourself?
I know Brent's there. I see him there. His little button's there. How you doing, Brent? Are you there? See, this is what happens, Bill, when we come back from vacation. I tell you, it's getting back to the routine of like making sure. I know, and the thing is, Brent can hear me. You can hear me, right, Brent? Oh, come on. I know he's probably chatting there. Can we do this again, Brent? Are you on a headset? And this is how disasters happen in real life. You prepare for an event, you go over what the next steps are, and then when it actually happens, Bill, what do we say happens in the absence of information?
Chaos.
Chaos reigns. We did our best. We did our pre-meeting on this production here. Brent, I know you can hear us. If you maybe unplug your headset, and you can hold up the app as well too and just straight talk to it like you're on the phone. We're gonna try, unless I gotta do it again.
All right, can we actually hear him?
Brent, can you hear me? Blink twice if you can hear me.
Clap once. It must be the East Coast, West Coast time period too.
Okay. Hey, Brent, we're going to try this one more time here. This may go on the blooper reel at the very end. I don't know. But I'm going to try it one more time, Brent. Bill, we'll be back here.
All right.